Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
Did you know when the body is balanced, it heals itself? This is the guiding principle of Dr. Mark Armstrong. Dr. Mark is the founder of Ahimke Center for Wholeness. Ahimke is a wellness center that offers services and training programs that help you grow yourself. Ahimke is a word which symbolizes our commitment to honor the sacredness of all life and our respect for the vital force that flows through all living creatures. We seek to teach and heal, and thereby express our love for mankind, the earth, and the infinite universe. Ahimke Center for Wholeness services include acupressure, foot detoxification, Reiki, iridology, massage, Ahimke Mind Management, which is a process that uses the natural rhythms of the body to balance the mind. It enables total well-being and getting the thinking out of the way so the brainstem can do its work, and much more. For more information, visit ahimke.net. That's ahimki.net. Ahimke Center for Wholeness, honoring the ancient practice of energy medicine.
This presence is everywhere. Love is everywhere. Peace is everywhere. Joy is everywhere. These are eternal qualities, not merely the absence of conflict. These are eternal qualities that are real, but they need instrumentalities through which to express truth.
From Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles, California, a visionary, author, one of the teachers of The Secret.
Everything is energy. Energy is never destroyed, never created, and it becomes exactly what you put your attention on. And there's enough for everyone.
Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith are coming to Atlanta's Hillside International Truth Center with Living from the Overflow, How to Embody a Consciousness of Wealth, Saturday, September 7th.
So we are not here to beg God to come down and give us a miracle. You are the miracle. You're the miracle already. And the present is waiting for you to up-level your filaments, your wattage, so that that which is potential, that is everywhere, can have access so that you can express it.
This soul-filled, thought-provoking workshop will teach you ways to cultivate a spiritual understanding of authentic wealth, how to activate the law of abundance in all areas of your life, how to set your intention and focus your attention, your ticket to transformation. Michael Bernard Beckwith at Hillside, Saturday, September 7th. Tickets are only $42, representing Hillside's 42nd anniversary. Get tickets and more at hillsideinternational.org.
Life Conversations. It's all about positivity. It's all about self-empowerment.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. I am peace. I am here. I am strong. I'm free. Well, I'm the delight of God. I am you. I am healed. I am love. I am great. I am wonderful, I am whole, and I am free.
What if your time on the planet was ending today? If you had one thing to tell us, tell me what would you say? Would you laugh, would you cry when you watch the view of your eyes? Did you lay it all out on the table or hold it inside? Did you dot every T? Did you cross every eye? Did you live every day of your life? Would you think you were ever?
But you think you knew right when you thought about the way that you felt when love touched your heart for the first time. Would you want to do over with a little more stuff? But would another 5 minutes to tell her you love her be more than enough? More than enough. Yeah. More than enough. Oh. What if you knew that goodbye was a heart away? Would you still never speak to love for making mistakes? Would you hate anybody who didn't agree? Or would you love everyone that you see? Would you think you were in love? Would you think you were right when you thought about the way that you felt when love touched your heart for the first time? Would you want, yeah, with a little more stuff? Or would another 5 minutes of holding him closer be more than enough? More than enough. Very little happenstance to you. Look behind and find in each and every line love was on time. Hey, hey, hey. So many people sleepwalk through the day after day. Woke up mid-stride thinking, how did this happen to me? I opened my heart and wiped the sleep from my eyes. I started laughing so hard that I cried, because I found I was wealthy and I found I'd arrived when I thought about the way that I felt when love touched my heart for the first time. I didn't need a do-over with a little more stuff, because I found that each time I could tell them I loved them was more than enough.
Good afternoon, welcome to the Community Hour, and it's Wednesday, 12 o'clock, well, 1 minute past 12, which means Wellbeing Now with Dr. Chris Beaumont. Good afternoon.
Hello guys, all of a rush today, managed to get it just on time in the end, but share a little secret, I was away stocking up my wellbeing for a little while. Greasy spoon, big English breakfast, all the things I shouldn't do. And anyone who knows me will know I'm the last guy in the world that needs an English breakfast down his throat too regularly. But hey, whether we like it or not, something inside me drives me to seek out some well-being, seek out some good things. And I had my breakfast and it was wonderful. And all the harm that people have told me it's going to do me is kind of somewhere in the back of my brain and I didn't really notice it. Hey guys, here we go. When we're looking at what's in wellbeing, perhaps it's time for that. We've been doing 6-7 shows now, and we've been talking about topical issues. We've been talking about how the thing actually works at a higher level than the individual, really, and why collectively, as a community, it's worth taking notice. Well, let's try and talk about the individual today. Let's get zero in on all of us poor mortals who actually experience very similar things. And I think in that statement alone, there is a key to this issue. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you do, who you are. It doesn't really matter whether you're 10, 15, 20, 55, 95. The fact is, there are similar things going on inside all of us. Understanding what well-being is about is kind of beginning to understand that there's a common theme that stretches right across the globe inside everyone. And they want to get up in the morning and they want to feel good. They want to feel okay. So what goes into that? Well, there's all sorts of really cocky sorts of interesting theorems and things that go into it. But I guess in simple terms, we could go real easy on this. There's kind of reality. There's the spiritual. There's fantasy. There's the conscious. There's the unconscious. And together, they all kind of mix and match and mash up into this sense of, am I okay or not? What's actually going on in my world? Well, for me, there's two kind of distinct divisions here. There's the things you can do something about and the things you can't do something about. Well, the spiritual thing, actually, you can't change it, but you can join in with it if you so wish. So you can't do anything about it, but you can decide to accept it. So there's that area. In the conscious, you can choose what to say when you say it. You can choose pretty much what to do and when to do it. So you can kind of organise that pretty much to suit yourself. Troublesome areas like reactiveness. Well, if you're truthful to yourself, it's somebody else that's energised you. Somebody else has made you do something. So you're probably not in control of what's going on, but you may well be able to control the response. You can control what you put in, your bit of it. So here we are with these two areas, and the one we haven't talked about so far is the unconscious. And I leave it till the last, advisedly. The reason it's in the last slot is because it's one of the much bigger areas in all of our lives that people seldom think of, seldom talk about, seldom go anywhere near. But actually, it lives in fairly tight harmony with the truth of what is going on in our world. Usually quite quietly in the background without causing too much bother. There's a lot of argument to suggest that it helps you dream. It helps you pick the subject of your dreams. It helps you pick the content of your dreams. There's a lot of argument that says it helps you arrange things in such a way that you think you can understand them, in such a way that you can draw on that experience later on and use it for something that you're doing. But what does the unconscious actually do for us? Well, scientifically, we know that it is almost able to have a mind of its own. It's almost able to be completely autonomous from the human. So what is the human? Well, in this sense, it looks and sounds very much like the human is a conduit into the unconscious that he carries around. He's not in control of it. He's not going to make it do anything that it doesn't want to be doing. But actually, the unconscious is quite capable of sending you information, quite capable of giving you data, fixes on times and places. And I have to tell you, it's very, very, very adept at telling you fibs. So you've got this thing locked inside you. It's like your little black box flight recorder. There he is. Difference is, of course, when people find the unconscious, when they find the black box, it's actually not always going to be telling the truth. It's not going to be recording the facts. What it's going to be doing is kind of recording your well-being fluctuations. And that's kind of how it works. What it actually does to you, it soaks up your moods. It soaks up all the things that are going on inside your head, all the experiences. Mm. And it filters them all down into a footprint that is it okay or isn't it? Does it trouble me or doesn't it? Is it something that pesters me or is it something that compliments me? What is actually going on in my world? If you're really clever and you have a real good well-being and it's all trotting along, you will think to yourself, okay, then the unconscious is looked after. Yippee, great, not going to get any problems from that part. But what about guilt? Because there's the unconscious busy telling you all these things and sitting quietly. But suddenly, when you're doing well, you think, why am I doing so well? Why aren't other people doing well also? Why am I so lucky? When's it going to end? My goodness, do I really deserve it? Crikey, what does it mean for me? I've really been doing well 5, 10 years. It's bound to come to an end sooner or later. Crikey, that the precipitation of crisis must mean that I'm getting ever closer to when it finishes rather than... Mm-hmm. So the longer you go with your success, the tougher it gets.
Yep.
So here we are. This horrible little thing that creeps around inside you. No one really knows where it is. Brain, in your boots, in your knapsack, who knows? Got such power to make us do things. If we're going to talk about well-being in a serious sense, in a psychological sense, what we've got to try and get all our heads around, and pardon the pun, is that with our unconscious, it's like having a check and balance system that's kind of really independent of you. It's yours, it's very personal to you, and it only reacts to the things you know about, because it's kind of everything's filtered through you.
Right.
So you are in part able to determine what kind of information you stack up in it.
Mm.
But how it works and the feedback is kind of a big mystery.
Let me ask you a question. So with the unconscious, are we in control of it, or what we do affects the unconscious?
I think we are in a third person control situation.
Okay.
In as much as what we do affects what goes into it. What comes out of it affects how we interpret things and what we do.
Okay.
But actually the timing is almost a few days, a few months, a few years adrift somehow.
Yes.
So it's almost like a parallel universe is going on.
Mm.
It's all the same things, but not necessarily in the same order at the same time.
So we are... the conscious part of us is the pen that draws the blueprint.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and with that blueprint, we're trying to be logical, right. Organized, okay.
Mm.
And I guess you could look at the unconscious and conscious in those terms if you wanted to. The unconscious is chaotic. It does everything whenever it thinks it should. It actually picks up on the vibes, feelings, things that are going on. Quite arbitrarily, from around you, all your senses are working. You could be concentrating on a document or on an interaction with someone, and what your unconscious is doing is picking up the vibe from two people sitting behind you. And actually they're in the same room and they're colouring what's going on, but actually they're not the one you're talking to. But they are chipping in from time to time and making your conversation more difficult.
Right.
And your unconscious comes away with this blueprint that is kind of, what the hell are they up to? Pain in the backside, which they go away.
Right.
So it kind of soaks it up from all around on its own.
So
when we talk about the ages of consciousness and unconsciousness, we have to go back to the child syndrome. We have to go back to the ages from birth up until kind of 14. And as these developments come and go, one thing that has been observed more and more is that, of course, children don't really have a problem with this. They're quite happy to be in the fantasy world. They're quite happy for the unconscious to be telling them bad things. They're quite happy to have bogeymen and nightmares and difficulties and all manner of stuff. And what they actually do with it is cry. Mum and dad come along and fix it. And actually it doesn't matter anymore. So a few moments after the problem arises, mostly it's fixed.
Right.
So it's kind of easy. It's okay. So what do we do as grown-ups then? When mum and dad don't come along and pat us on the back anymore, where do we go? What do we actually try and do with all this information that crowds into us? Mostly in the quiet times. Mostly when your feet stop moving around and when you actually settle into a place that is supposed to be for relaxation. It's supposed to be for an easy time. Excuse me. And what actually happens to you is you start off thinking, I'm going to listen to X piece of music because it's really nice and it helps me and it calms my soul without any problem at all. And as you begin to get calmer, the little niggles from the unconscious creep around and your mind strays off onto other things. I guess what we kind of learn as we get older is that we are fairly isolated and we are fairly much on our own. And as such, what we have to kind of try to do, we have to take out the position of mum and dad and close relatives. We have to kind of do something with that that actually means we can cope, we can survive. Well, for me, that's a heck of a transition. It's why, during the adolescent period, teenagers are often described as uncommunicative, unhelpful, really difficult. My mum and dad don't understand me. Let's slam a door. Let's stomp up the stairs. Let's do everything we could possibly do to make life difficult. Let's have tattoos that we shouldn't have. Let's get our lip pierced. Let's do all these crazy things. And mums and dads are repeatedly sitting back, throwing their hands up in horror. How on earth did I ever breed or spawn such a creature? What on earth have I done? I'm just a perfectly ordinary guy, and I've got a teenager from hell that's ruining the house, ruining the driveway. I've got some greasy old motorbike out there that's dropping oil all over my new 2,000 quid patio. What are they doing? Answer, they're making the transition from the period where someone else kind of makes it all right to them having to make it all right. And it's a pretty painful passage. It's something that I guess a lot of people find really difficult. And for me, it's when some people kind of go wrong. We know that schizophrenia attacks young men during this age range more than at any other time. We know that self-harm comes upon young women generally during this period more than any other time. Why? Because the stress of actually making the passage is getting to them. It's actually making life internally difficult, and they're actually really struggling with it. So if it's such a chore, and if it's so difficult, why is it necessary? Well, I guess if you really come alongside the notion that in a community there are lots of individuals and they're all really alone, and they go home every day and they struggle with their unconscious and conscious thoughts and try to deal with them, it's kind of a pretty difficult and unpleasant place to find yourself. So I think what people are trying to do, mainly, certainly around Hastings area, actually they're trying their very best to seek a way that they are able to cope, everyone else is able to cope, and it doesn't spill into their lives from outside and make life difficult. So what do we need to study? Do we need to study the adult or the child? For me, my theory would be we need to understand that the child is inside the adult. We need to understand that to seek and understand well-being, those childish black and white views that were really very, very easy to cope with have formed the basis of your adult view. Yeah. And we need to really get close to the fact that with that adult view, you invent shades of grey to try and make it more acceptable and work better. Because as we all know, as we grow from childhood, a cut and dried black or white situation never really works. Mm-hmm. It makes us confrontational. It makes us difficult. It makes things either yes or no.
Right. I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah, for sure, without any shadow of a doubt. So what we've got to try and understand is that child that's in us is there for a reason. It's kind of telling us what it is we really believe. Are we hurt or not? Are we sad or not? Are we happy or not? And then what we do, we kind of interpret that and put some shades of grey to it. So we're a little bit happy or a little bit sad, or that hurt me a little bit, but it didn't hurt me too bad. Well, down in the unconscious, all this is milling around. And actually, some of the spikes that come out of it, like dreams, like bad periods in your life, like difficulties and unpleasant times, low moods, panic attacks, some of those things, that we kind of trace back to kind of the unconscious happening department, surely we should start to try and listen. We should start to try and understand why the blueprint we use allows the unconscious this space to put up these spikes to actually trouble us. Why is it different? Why are the two parts to it that we can't kind of get together somehow?
But isn't the adult world designed to ignore the child within us? Because if you think of the education system,
generalizing. Of course, if you're talking about homeschooling or some other schools that are setting up, it's slightly different. Well, I guess education that takes a holistic approach, but if it's more of an intellectual approach, which I think what main school education is about, just, okay, getting this information through your head, and that's it regardless of what you feel. And it looks like from school where we, what's the word, start to teach humans, young people, to ignore that part of themselves. Even you're talking about children that have imaginary friends. After a while, they say, don't worry, you grow out of it.
Yeah, I think I would agree. And I think you've kind of got the gist of the conversation so far, really, in as much as we train humans to be responsible, purposeful adults. Why? What, hogwash? Humans should be humans. Why do we try to train them to be something other than they are?
I think we actually, it's almost like we train humans the same way we domesticate animals.
Sure.
So if you act right, you get this. If you don't act right, you get that, or you get punished.
It's a control mechanism,
mm-hmm.
and it's based on a psychological premise that reward and retention of reward actually makes things happen.
Mm.
Okay. Do you want to live in a world where you're rewarded because someone else thinks you've done good? Is that really in your psyche? Is that really part of us? I can answer the question, and if there's any listeners out there that want to answer, I'd be really impressed with some answers.
Yep, the email address is studio@lifeconversationsradio.com, studio@lifeconversationsradio.com, or you can call in 01424205415 01424. Okay, start off again. Yeah, that's right. I keep thinking of the text number. So even though I'm saying, speaking of the unconscious and conscious, even though I'm saying the landline, my mind keeps thinking the text.
Good, isn't it?
And I'm trying to override that, but it kept getting in the way. So when I was saying the landline, it didn't sound like I was saying the right thing. But in my mind, I'm hearing the text number. Okay, the landline is 01424205415, 01424205415, and maybe someone wants to send us a text and they're waiting for the text number, but they sure got hold of my mind. Okay, the text number is 07951. That feels a lot easier. 474-481. 07951-474-481. You can send us your thoughts, maybe questions, or what you think about what you're hearing.
Yeah, I'm glad that was you doing that. I was impressed. I really enjoyed it. I can make a chump of myself without any help, so I'm glad. I'm glad you had your turn. It's really good. Getting back to the unconscious, it's not a bad example, is it? There are always two things going on inside our heads, whether we like it or not. They're always there. Some a lot more. And he's waving four fingers at me. I'm glad it's only four. But hey, the top bottom of this is, of course, there are lots of things going on in there. But as children, we seem to understand and accept there are lots of things going on in there. We don't seem to bother about it too much. As humans, we end up with stress-related illnesses. We end up with all sorts of downsides to it.
Mm.
And I'm beginning to sense, with my practice and as I get older, that it's the freedom to actually allow it to be that's the problem.
Mm.
We have compromised the freedom to allow a healthy spiritual world,
mm-hmm.
a healthy mystic world,
mm.
a healthy physical world.
Mm.
We seem to be saying to people, we are going to condition you and we're going to make you into the ideal human.
Mm.
Bang, there you go. Right. And the ideal human is busy saying back in the unconscious,
mm.
don't be so ridiculous, this is a matter for evolution, mm. we all know how this is going to end up, please stop being so silly.
Get over it.
Yeah, this is just a funny period you're going through, and to use one of your phrases, you'll grow out of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's really what's going on.
Yeah.
So why are we determined at every level around us to shove people into a mould to try and make them able to be coped with? Why do we just want to cope with people? Because the great mystery of childhood is anything goes. We're not really particularly unpleasant. Mm. We're kind of all right.
Mm.
And what we want to do is explore ourselves and discover what being alive means. So we want to dig things up, put them in our mouth, taste them, You know, little boys want to lift little girls' skirts up and see what they look like, and so on and so on and so on and so on. And so it goes along.
Right.
The voyage of discovery that starts from the moment we draw breath.
Mm.
Well, in some instances, a lot of people would say to you, from the moment you conceive, because the sensory perception areas start to develop. Well, you're an internal concept of your mother's.
Mm.
So actually before birth, sometimes these things are going on.
Mm.
So why do we change it?
Maybe we're afraid of life, because you were saying earlier, just we want to explore life. And when you think of emotions, as you were talking earlier, I thought of, okay, what you're talking about also, when you think of the emotions, which is well-being, how balanced you are, it changes from time to time. One minute you can have a thought and feel real sad. I know sometimes I've woken up in the middle of the night and a thought comes to mind, and basically I find myself getting caught up in that thought, struggling to go back to sleep. And only when I'm able to say, listen, get over it, leave it alone, or something like that, that I'm able to go back to sleep. And I think there's this fear that if we pay attention to the subconscious or the unconscious, the emotions, then we won't be able to do things right. I remember someone said to me one time, many years ago, we were talking about life, and I said, you've got to honor your feelings. And he said, no, you don't listen to your feelings, because your feelings change from time to time, and it will drive you mad. It will drive you astray. He said, you've got to listen to, because we end up talking about religion, you've got to listen to what the word says. And I couldn't really argue that, because it's like, no, it's your feeling that lets you know if you're going, if you listen to that internal guidance system, you know if something feels good. If you're talking to somebody and you say, something about that wasn't quite right. So if you deny that, you're denying your humanity.
Yeah, I mean, short answer is yes. But let's break it up into a couple of bits. Mostly these days, there is a school of thought that says when people are depressive and they're of low mood, one of the coping strategies that's really effective is, instead of trying to block out the bad thoughts, instead of trying to avoid them, is to set aside a period of time every day where you actually allow the dark thoughts to come to you.
Mm.
And instead of trying to defend yourself, you try and answer whatever these thoughts are saying to you. You try to work with them. You try to give them space, give them some time, and accept that inside you, actually, there are dark thoughts.
Right.
And one of the benefits for this has turned out to be that at inopportune moments, people tend not to be thinking of them.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to be able to make up this coping mechanism, and they can address the thoughts once they open their mind to allowing them in. And that seems to be the trick. Not trying to avoid it, not trying to hide it. A bit childlike. Because it hurts, cry. Because it hurts, speak up. Because it hurts, actually do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to have quite a profound effect on many sufferers of low mood or depression. So, is the blueprint for humanity that you talk of one that demands that you do something, or is it one that demands that you hide and pretend it's not there?
Mm.
Because I think that's where we're coming down to with well-being, really.
Mm.
We're asking about the blueprint of humanity. What is it that every human would do if they were just allowed to do whatever they want? Where the issues of emotions and hurtful emotions are concerned. What would any human being's reaction be if he wasn't confined and restricted in some way? And I think for me, one of the answers that's coming across loud and clear, especially with those that come to seek counselling and actually work on the issues, is the answer is a very simple one. They have to say something. They have to do something. They cannot sit idly by and just let it happen. So I guess humanity demands action. It demands something to go on. Does that something have to be physical? I don't think it does. I think you can choose. I think people are very different creatures. I think sometimes it has to be a physical action. You have to release your emotional energy, you go and join a boxing club, you go and join a running club, you drum, you fish, you do all sorts of things. But there are a group who are happy and content not to do physical things. They actually work the energy through in a cerebral fashion, and they work with tools like acceptance and understanding.
Right.
So there are many ways.
Right.
You can tailor make the way to suit yourself. I mean, for instance, you can be an avid angler who sits on the riverbank and thinks about the acceptance of what's going on in their world.
Mm.
So you can combine the two. It's not hard.
Right,
kind of
right.
easy. But it takes us back to this childlike view again. What is humanity demanding? Well, in children, we can see it. Mm. Humanity demands very few absolutes, but it does demand them, absolutely.
Mm.
There are no compromises involved. If children aren't fed, they squawk.
Mm.
If they're not warm, they squawk.
Mm.
If they're feeling emotionally threatened, they squawk.
Mm.
And it goes on. And there's a very short list of things that actually make children cry and be difficult. And most parents would be able to say, yeah, I know. That. Mm. One thing that really helped my daughter was if I snuggled her up in a blanket and made her feel secure, even if she was a little bit hungry and Mum hadn't come home yet, she'd be quite patient to wait for a minute. Mm. And all these things go up. Mm. Well, if children work that way,
mm.
what happens to it when we get older? Where does it go inside us? I have an answer that is probably it slips quietly into the unconscious.
Mm.
So in a way, we could start to think, well, maybe the unconscious then is kind of a bit playful and a bit naughty sometimes and a bit like a child. Because as a theory goes, there's nothing wrong with that for me. It's like when I get older, I'll have a middle age part of me that has to slip somewhere too. And I'll have a young adult age that has to slip somewhere too. And I wonder where they go. Because maybe they slip into the unconscious too.
Mm.
And if we're lucky enough to live to be 90, there's going to be a young old age that has to slip
right.
somewhere too when we get there. Because we're always us, and we always take up the same Einstein space continuum. We're always here. We're always in the same plane. There here we are. But inside us, there are all these dual existences
right.
that come from all over the time spectrum of our lifespan, and they run concurrently with today. And whether we like it or not, the tape is playing.
Mm-hmm.
For my case, I was born 1954, so I've got a tape that was playing in 55, 56, 57, so on. And if I think about it enough, inside my memory and unconscious, there are bits of it, and I can drag them out and have a look at them.
Right, right.
So in effect, I'm a time traveller.
Yeah.
I've travelled back 40 years
mm.
and had a look at something that happened a long time ago. Well, that's going on inside all of us. That's our potential. It's in us.
Mm.
When we look at the fantasy programmes on TV about time travel and about Star Trek and Star Wars and all these things, what you kind of miss sometimes, I think, is the guy that writes that story has written a whole philosophy. He's actually written a whole way of life, from how they get fed to how they go to the loo to how they travel to how they think.
Mm.
Well, that's come out of a human being. Hasn't come out of any mysterious place, has
right,
it?
Right, right, right.
Come out
right.
of one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't got anything different to you or me.
Mm.
He just put it together different and used it different.
I'm just, as always, and like you were saying, this whole so many things are going on at once. And as I think of well-being, and even this morning I was having a thought that what happens generally, some of the meetings that I go to, maybe 9 out of 10 meetings, we say what is right as opposed to what's true.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, we just want to say what is right. Okay, yeah, that's right to say that.
True.
But even though at the back of our minds, we know what is really true. That, hold on a minute, we know this idea is not going to go so far, or, you know, if you have a supervisor who's saying, okay, what do you think we need to do to improve the company? And if you have a relationship with this person and things haven't been done, in the back of our mind, we're thinking, yeah, well, it's just doing this because we've been told to do it. Instead of actually addressing what's true, we say what sounds right or looks right. And so, and I think we live our general lives like that. We deny those true thoughts and try and do what's right.
I think for me, I'd like to come at that from a kind of spurious angle, the way I often do with things. At the beginning of today, we started talking about the concept of well-being and what's actually in it.
Mm.
And we kind of discovered, really, that one of the best ways to study it to begin with is what goes on for children. What are children like? Well, you're talking about that very concept for me. You're talking about the honest, truthful child saying, But actually, what's good for the company would be that you've turned up on time every morning and didn't actually take extra long tea breaks, Scott.
Right, right.
But the adult saying, well, hey, you're doing your best. hey, kind of, it's okay, Gov. I don't really know.
Yeah.
And there we have it.
Mm.
So we got a lot to learn from the more simplistic view. And it kind of takes me to the next level, if you like. I mean, we're approaching halfway through the hour, and it's probably turned to click into, okay, then, if we've identified these issues within the well-being and it's the child part is better, I think perhaps the next half hour ought to be about, okay, then, what language do we need to talk?
Hmm.
How do we need to get this universal so that everyone can understand what we're saying?
Right.
And that seems to be the next step for me. Are we going to have a little break today? Right, so if we run on into the little break, we'll come back with where's the language and what should it be?
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life. Life Conversations. Committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
It's not always easy to see what is coming at you, or better yet, for you. You need someone in your corner who can help you navigate those blind spots. Life Coach Today has a unique ability to guide you toward clarity with compassionate coaching and an amazing sense of humor. As a coach for over 15 years, Life Coach Today has been working closely with people and freeing them to live their best life. If you are in a spot where your best friend's advice or family member's tips are not working for you, you want to step onto the playing field of life with a coach who will walk with you and support you in tapping into the best in you. When you are done with Life Coach Today, you will be the change you want to see. We'll give you practical tools to finally embrace all of you and empower you to step into your greater yet to be. For a 45 minutes complimentary session, email Life Coach Today at ask@lifecoachtoday.com. That's ask@lifecoachtoday.com or call 678-561-0607. That's 678-561-0607. Be still, listen, and be transformed.
This presence is everywhere. Love is everywhere. Peace is everywhere. Joy is everywhere. These are eternal qualities, not merely the absence of conflict. These are eternal qualities that are real, but they need instrumentality through which to express truth.
From Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles, California, a visionary, author, one of the teachers of The Secret.
Everything is energy. Energy is never destroyed, never created, and it becomes exactly what you put your attention on. And there's enough for everyone.
Dr. Michael Bernard Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith are coming to Atlanta's Hillside International Truth Center with Living from the Overflow, How to Embody a Consciousness of Wealth, Saturday, September 7th.
So we are not here to beg God to come down and give us a miracle. You are the miracle. You're the miracle already. And the present is waiting for you to up-level your filament, your wattage, so that that which is potential, that is everywhere, can have access so that you can express it.
This soul-filled, thought-provoking workshop will teach you ways to cultivate a spiritual understanding of authentic wealth, how to activate the law of abundance in all areas of your life, how to set your intention and focus your attention, your ticket to transformation. Michael Bernard Beckwith at Hillside, Saturday, September 7th. Tickets are only $42, representing Hillside's 42nd anniversary. Get tickets and more at hillsideinternational.org.
God of my spirit, supreme inspiration.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Yes, we're back. You're listening to Wellbeing Now with Dr. Chris Bowman. If you've got any questions, any thoughts, any ideas that you think it's about wellbeing, or if you agree with what Dr. Chris is saying, or you disagree, or you have a different take on it, email us, studio@lifeconversationsradio.com. studio@lifeconversationsradio.com. The text number is 07951-474-481. 07951-474-481. Or you can call in at 01424-205-415.
Okay, back to the question. What language should we be using? Well, I think the first thing to do, I've got to kind of nail my colours to the mast, I think. What I've discovered by working in the local community for the past 10 years is that no one really knows what language to use. They've all got their own. They all insist it's the right one. And they're being really difficult to shift into a place where they're all kind of joining in and understanding what the language is about. Why is this so? Well, I guess for many people, if you admit that humanity is the watchword, if you admit that it's the way to understand, if you admit that it's the way to learn, it brings with it lots and lots of responsibilities in terms of, well, money's not all there is anymore. Power and people in positions of power don't really count for much anymore, because actually the real power's with the people that are part of humanity. But let's make no mistake, we're not excluding those people that are in power. We're actually saying to them, come on, guys, you're in their community. You're part of it. Why are you setting yourselves apart from the humanity part of the community? Why are you still doing things to us and not doing things with us? Come on, let's be honest. But that's a real culture shock to let people understand. So the language of well-being has got to be something that we can all join in with. It's got to be something that we all have a bit of a belief in, and it's got to be something that we can all understand readily and easily. Sounds like a heck of a thing, doesn't it? But if we consider that inside all of us is the four or five, or are the four or five platform parts to our individual well-being, we understand it already. As individuals, we know exactly when we feel good or when we feel bad. So is it that hard to put it into a language, put it into words that you can understand? No, of course it isn't hard. It's about stripping away political correctness. It's about taking away the nonsense of talking in a language that we've kind of adopted for social occasions, that doesn't offend anyone, that doesn't upset anyone, that doesn't challenge or compromise or disagree with anyone. Because frankly, a society that continues to agree on everything will go nowhere.
Right.
Because they'll disappear up their own backside at some stage. And that's the end of it.
Literally.
We have got to have controlled disagreements. We've got to have confrontations to systems and procedures. And we've got to let humanity's diversity come through and actually try and demand what it needs and talk about what it needs. That's the important thing. Always the results are not important. What actually tends to be more important than anything is talking about what it is you need, and in some ways you find some of your own answers to fulfill that.
Right, right.
And you find what it is you expect from others. Mm. And if you get a group of people in a room that are all doing the same thing, you'll be really surprised when you discover that actually a lot of them are talking about the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them actually want the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that difficult to get it sorted. But you have to have a debate. And I think my challenge, as I reiterated once before on these shows, we've got to start the debate. We've got to start talking. Now, places like the Community Network, BME Community, local council, we have got to get together and we have got to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But we mustn't be shy and we mustn't get prissy and ridiculous. If someone says something we don't like, we mustn't be going down the personal route of taking a front.
Mm-hmm.
We must simply be standing up and saying, that was particularly unpleasant. Why did you feel the need to say that?
Right. And wait for an answer.
Yeah, and listen. Pay
exactly.
attention.
Yep.
You know, we all could get into our respective groups and say, my group's right, and this is wonderful. And I guess some people would think that I've done the same on the issue of well-being. But I'm going to beg to differ. I'm going to sort of confront you all right now and say, what I think well-being does for people is allow them a space to actually be different. Allow them a space to say something that's not conforming to the ordinary, if you like, of how we think it ought to be. Because that's the trick for me, how we think it ought to be. Why can't we talk about how it is? Why can't we talk about how it feels right to progress it? Instead of, well, actually, we've decided that this is law, therefore it must be right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if people point the finger at me, so we might as well go with one of the biggest contentions. Let's look at race relations. There's a law that says it's illegal to be detrimental to anyone of a different race, colour, or creed. That law is only as good as the people that implement it. It's only as good as the members of the public that actually live with it. Just because someone's written it in a statute book somewhere, it don't make it right, Governor.
And it doesn't make it stop.
And that's for sure. And what we've got to get to grips with here is the people in the street that point the finger and are rude to other groups have to be challenged as to why they thought it was right to do that, what gave them the arrogance and the permission to do so. Because that's where change takes place. It takes place within the people. It doesn't take place in the law books. You can write as many laws as you want that make people behave in particular ways. Another interesting one, speeding. We all know it's wrong. We all know we're going to get caught sooner or later. And we all know there are laws that say we shouldn't. But I don't think there's one driver that hasn't sped in their vehicle in the last week.
Right.
Simple as that.
Right.
Did the law change it? No, what it did was it meant we could be punished if we got caught.
Right.
So the only crime is getting caught.
And even when you're talking about speeding, when you think of the speeding camera, isn't that the kind of idea? Because I know, I mean, I've spoken to people from Nigeria. If there was a speeding camera in Nigeria, you would not see it from a distance. You would not see it, period. So the idea, which I'm glad I can see the camera, but the idea of actually saying don't speed, but we're going to put a camera there just in case you do so we can catch you. What do most of us do? We slow down when you get to the camera. Sure. As soon as we pass, we floor it again.
And that's an example of how the authorities in England, Wales and Scotland work. They try to manipulate you to do things rather than get you to believe it's the right thing to do.
Right.
So they stick it out. Another interesting thing, I've just been reminded of it, there was a little village somewhere in Kent that got two or three life-size cutouts of a policeman and stood them by the side of the road. And kind of in the dark, it was difficult to tell whether they were a real policeman. So the people that went through the village of a night time, twilight time, on the rush hour, all started slowing down. Because they thought, well, the guy standing by the road with a pointed head. The trick is, they're manipulating people rather than fixing the problem. So it means you keep spending on trying to fix that problem, because you keep manipulating it away, endlessly.
Yeah.
But if you went and tried to fix it, actually, you wouldn't have to keep spending, would you? So, in a way, if you really are adamant that 30 mile an hour should be 30 mile an hour, 40 should be 40, and so on, with the technology we have today, you put a restrictor in the motor car that in a 30 mile an hour zone won't let you go any quicker than 30. You fix it.
Right.
End of story.
Yeah.
Every car you produce, it'll only do 30 and 30, 40 and 40, and 60 and 60. No one buys a car that does 150 miles an hour anymore because there's no point. You can only do 60. That's an end of that.
If that.
It's not a problem.
Right. I'm wondering if, you know, when you talk about allowing people to see that they can change or letting people, you know, there's a lot of money spent on commercial what you should do or shouldn't do. And I'm wondering if we're not educated to make the change for ourselves, because when people start realizing that they can change or do things differently, is that a challenge? Does that make them, does the authority feel like, oh boy, we're going to be vulnerable here? Or is it just the way it's been? We just think if we tell people what to do, then we've got more chance of them doing what we want them to do.
Why do you think that there's such a hoo-ha at the moment and for the last 5 years about empowering people? Every document I pick up that's to do with my community work, somewhere in it, it alludes to or spells out that we should be empowering the community. Well, the only reason they know that we should be empowering the community is they know it's not now. And what they're doing is saying, if we empower them, if we do it, we can kind of control it.
Right.
If we let it set it free and just empowered them and let them get on with it, we'd be in real trouble.
So they're really not into empowering. It's just another label for controlling them.
They're allowing people to come to the table to consult, and at the next level, they're not listening to the consultation. They're doing what they want.
Right.
So they're making people feel empowered. They're giving them the opportunity to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's not until you take the talking and use it in their own mechanism that actually things change. For instance, Health and Social Care Forum locally, we actually put in a objection to a planning application properly, in the proper way, filled in the proper form, and used their rules as an objection. And along with lots of other people, not just us, there were other groups that did the same, but the station plaza had to be altered because the objection was upheld. But that's playing by their rules. That's understanding that coming to the table for consultation and saying there's not enough disabled bays would not have got you disabled bays. Understanding that you must take that energy, discover the legal way to get at it and make the change come true and use it.
But then isn't that the problem? I mean, because it's like people say, I don't have that time and energy. We don't have... Doesn't it just leave us a small group of people wanting to push forward, people who probably are dedicated to that particular thing? Because what you need is for change to happen, and use the language that whoever is doing the consultation with you is, you know, when they come to the table and talking with you, you've got to follow through. But we also live in a busy society here where we just got to take care of our family, go to work.
As a psychologist, I'd say to you, for all of those that are dedicated to want a better way, to want a change to happen, and that's what I know this radio station is about. I mean, Life Conversations Radio is about making a change come true. We are in a place where unless we help people and show them that a change can happen, we will be beset by, but all my energy goes into looking after my family and I haven't got time for this.
Right.
People need to be allowed to see for themselves that changes can be made to happen. And right now, kind of joining in with the process is a way to get change to happen. But it is also a way to change the process. And we must never lose sight of the bigger picture, that what we're trying to do is take away this particular piece of process and make it into a more user-friendly, sensible way of carrying on. So we have to demonstrate our power, our energy, and get changes to happen. And I hope what that will do is allow people to see it happening and want to join in, because actually there's something good coming out of it.
I guess the flip side to that as well is, the other day when you said to me, I did a good job playing devil's advocate on the show, and I was like, really? I didn't know I did that, but I now I'm aware of it. It's like, okay, yeah, because what I tend to do is kind of think of how somebody who doesn't really, who is paying attention to what we're talking about, and saying, well, but how does that fit into my world? And then, you know, not playing devil's advocate now, it's thinking, even though it looks like, when we generalize, it looks like everybody's saying, I don't have time to do that. My family takes precedent over anything I do. There are people who, there's actually a balance in this world.
Sure.
And this conversation just stimulates more people to pay more attention.
All of those people that say those things also say things like, I wish the schools were better for my children. I wish the streets were safer. I wish. And it's like your good friend Benjamin Zephaniah, those who don't do politics don't do anything.
That's it.
Because it's happening around us.
Yeah.
And whether we like it or not, we cannot avoid politics. It's how our society is put together right now. It has become almost a religion in its own right.
Yeah, definitely.
And it we've got a problem with that, because we don't understand which banner it's under, really.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to try and split this open and say, well, it's a philosophy, but is it a faith? What are they doing? Well, to some of the guys and women inside politics, you'd be forgiven for arguing, well, I think it is a faith.
Right.
And I'd have to be saying to you, but I want the faith to come out of it. I want level-headed, philosophically sound individuals leading my country. I do not want unbalanced faith followers leading a country.
Right.
If any one vista takes precedence, it unbalances the whole of the wellbeing issue.
Yeah.
So if the spiritual part overloads it, it unbalances it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that in an unkind way. It's just a purely objective comment.
Mm-hmm.
If you allow any one vista of your world to take center stage and overbalance, even if it's a good thing, like your family, you've overbalanced your perceptions,
right?
And you will struggle with them because the rest need coping with. And if you turn your back, they will creep up on you. And things like personal time and all these issues that you don't allow yourself will end up banging on the door and saying, you're going to resent the kids because actually they've taken you away from things you want to be doing.
Yeah.
And that's in all of us. That's the humanistic part. That's in us.
It, you were saying earlier about what the subconscious does and how sometimes when things are going well and success is kind of around the corner or we're experiencing it, we start saying things like, how long is it going to last? I don't deserve this, and whatever, whatever. But then I think of people that I've worked with where they'll say, well, I know I should take time with myself, spend some time with myself, but I got family. So on one hand, they're saying, I know I should do this, but. And then they also go on to say, I really hate it that it has to be that way. And it seems like we rather punish ourselves than actually allow ourselves to experience ourselves.
Well, I think that offers me an in to a kind of place that really is at the wrong end of the program, really.
But as always, right?
We can kind of talk about it. There must be someone out there that actually works in the self-harm world. And I'd like to have a guest of that sort who can come and talk to us about it in more depth. But from a psychologist's point of view, there is a bit of the self-harmer in all of us.
Yeah.
There is a bit of the only one we're really in control of is us.
Mm.
So if anyone has to do the extra mile, it best be us. We punish ourselves. And although that's a very mild form of self-harm in its conceptual state, it's exactly the same premise that real dramatic self-harmers are into, is that they want relief, emotional relief, and the only one they can control is them. They're actually usually quite nice people, actually, because they can't hurt others.
Right.
So they do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you've got to try and get to grips with. Because they're nice, because they're sensitive, and because they're very emotional, they end up at an awful place where they have to be harmed by themselves. That's a concept that's worth a whole program, or probably more.
Yes, yes.
But the truth is, it's in all of us. Mm. Now, how many times have you sat behind that desk and thought to yourself, I really should be going home, I'm really tired. No, I just got one more dish to do. Employers.
Don't ask that question.
Employers call it focus. I call it punishment.
Madness.
If you don't allow the unconscious and the conscious and all these areas to have their fair say, you're in a problem. It's the balance. That's well-being. It's the balance.
Yeah.
So we're coming up to the end of the show. We've got kind of 5 minutes to go. So if there's anyone out there who wants to be talking to us, come on, get on the phone. Right. 01424-205-415. Let's have some comments. Mm. And if nothing else, let's start storing up some comments for the next show. If you can't talk to us in person, if you're shy, we've got a letterbox downstairs, Enterprise Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Scribble it on a postcard, poke it through the door.
And that's 17 Robertson Street, Hastings.
Yeah, come on, go.
341HL.
Yeah, we can be got at in every way known to man, almost. Yeah, a bit of toilet paper, scribble it on it, poke it to the letterbox.
But here's the flip side to what's going on here. Maybe all the listeners actually agree with what you're saying.
Could well be.
And they think, it's no point, because that's exactly what I think.
Well, I'm going to say to them, there is a point, because we've got to carry the message to the local council, we've got to carry it to the local HVA, we've got to carry it to the community network, we've got to carry it all corners of the globe.
Right.
And as much as, like all humans, there's a little bit of me that says being a megalomaniac would be great and I could do it all myself, this is wonderful. The truth is, that's not true.
Right.
Can't do that. I need lots of help, lots of people to join in. So if all you do is scribble right on, man, on a piece of paper and stick your name under it, stick it through the letterbox. Let's know you're there and let's know you agree. Let's give what we're doing a bit of purpose. Let us be able to go to the local borough council and say, in the past 3 months, 10,000 people have said they agree. Why aren't you listening? Let's it doesn't matter how you communicate, let us know you're there. Let us know you agree. I like people that agree with me wonderfully, but I have to be really truthful. I really like people that disagree better, because they give me a chance to develop my ideas and a chance to react with them and actually hone the ideas and see if it really works. So all the ones that agree, love you to bits. It's great you're on board. Let us know. But all the ones that disagree, sharpen your wits. Come on.
Right, right. Before we go, we've got about 4 minutes or so. Just wanted to go back to the self-harm because it just... flying around in my head, and usually, well, not usually, I'm almost inclined to say that the people that self-harm actually are taking control in a crazy kind of way. People might disagree with this, but at least they get that instant release, and if also others can see that they're crying out for help. But those of us that, like me, who was saying, oh, you know, I need to do better than this. I know I'm tired. I know I'm overwhelmed, but it's too much. I need to focus here and get this done. That energy is forced inside. It's pushed in, and it keeps piling up until one day it could be on A21, and then before you know it's road rage or an accident or all that kind of crazy things.
And that's exactly the process that self-harmers go through. They internalize the energy of the emotions and then explode it in private on themselves.
Mm.
And it is an explosion of energy, because what we're talking about is, if you have ever had someone come to you that tells you something really sad about your world, and then you cry, and halfway through the crying you come to a stage where actually suddenly it feels better. Suddenly, for some reason, you don't need to cry anymore. But actually, you feel okay. That's the relief the self-harm is looking for. That tiny few seconds where you suddenly think, oh, this is okay.
I feel better now.
What a way to have to do it. We need to get our heads around society is producing the self-harm. That's what it's doing. It's a reaction to how we organise things. And that's the thing that I think, from a person-centred perspective, you've got to be really clear on. If there are drug addicts in the world, why?
Right.
Because someone grows the drugs and someone stretches them out enough to make them need them.
And someone makes the money.
Sure. Someone is doing it.
Yes.
Self-harm. Yeah. Why do people self-harm? Because society doesn't allow them a space to cope in any other way. We have a collective responsibility to all of those that end up being unable to cope. It's all very well for us who run along saying, this is okay, we're all right, Gov, thank you very much. But on the day it goes wrong, when you're looking at it from the downside of the slope, you will desperately want someone into society to offer you a hand and say, come on, Gov, climb back up, this is okay. So why shouldn't you extend your hand to those that are already there? The first thing you're going to want if it goes wrong for you is a hand up.
Yeah.
Well, bend down and offer someone a hand. And I think that's a good place to finish for today.
And we can continue the conversation next week, 12 o'clock to 1. Wellbeing Now with Dr. Chris Pullman. Thank you for listening.
And so imagine this source energy, let's call it God, you usually do. This source energy, who is the consensus of what everyone, even one-celled organisms, have been asking for that would be best for them. Can you imagine a more equal opportunity? Can you imagine anything being more right than for there to be a holder of all requests and a pushing against nothing? An environment where what you ask for is always given? And if you can stay with us just a little bit, imagine an environment, even a physical environment, which is really about as far as you can imagine, and that's fine. Imagine a physical environment where everyone is making their personal and important, valid requests from where they stand, from whatever just happened. And when they ask for whatever it is, they get it. And then we just want to remind you that every single thing that any of you have ever asked for or ever will ask for is for one reason only. You think you will feel better in the having of it. In other words, what you're asking for is alignment. What you're asking for is harmony. What you're asking for is wholeness. What you're asking for is the validation of that which is source, of the goodness of that which is you. So imagine a society where billions of people are asking, and source is holding for each of them the equivalent of what they're asking for. Only in this physical environment that we are describing, these billions have been working for alignment with who they are. And so when they ask, they don't doubt if they will receive. They don't worry. They don't feel competition of others. They don't squabble over resources. They don't push against others. They don't try to make others wrong so that they can be right. They just ask and receive. And we want you to step back far enough with us to understand that no matter how it looks to you in any moment in time, that's really what's going on. You all are out here asking, and Source is answering what you're asking for, and the whole of humanity, the whole of all that isness, is becoming more as a result of your fantastic participation here. The reason that we are here talking with you is because you've summoned us. But we're not here to try to get you to change what you're asking for. We just want you to understand the process. We just want you to understand the valid platform on which you stand and the perfection of this environment as it exists. We just want you to understand that everything is working out just the way we all knew it would, and that as the contrast inspires you to the new request, that future generations will benefit by the new requests that you are putting there. In other words, every new generation benefits by what the generation before struggled with. You acknowledge that. We just want you to understand that you don't have to croak or be the new generation in order to experience the benefit. You get to ask, and you get to be the receiver of what you've been asking for, but you've got to understand how this game is played. You've got to understand the laws of the universe. You've got to understand the two vibrational aspects of you. You've got to be willing to move in the direction of what you want and no longer continue to beat the drum of what caused you to ask for it to begin with. In other words, when you are struggling with money, you're asking all day, all day, all day, all day, all day, all day for more money. But as you continue to beat the drum of, I don't have enough, and it's not fair that he's got too much, and somebody should do something about it, and it's not being evenly proportioned, and there are too many people that are taking too big of a slice of the pie, and there are not enough of us getting enough pieces of the pie, as you are beating those drums, you are depriving yourself of the vibrational attitude that is necessary for you to get what you've been asking for. So your fortune just keeps amassing. We've been calling this your vibrational reality. We've been calling it your vibrational escrow. Your vibrational fortune, and it's not just a vibrational fortune, it's a real fortune that will manifest. Your fortune is being held for you in this vibrational bank, so to speak, and nobody has access to it but you. Nobody can get in there and take your escrow. But you know what happens with so many of you? You don't get in there and receive it either. You stand on the outside of it and complain about not having it when you're the only one who can get in there where it is. And we want you to understand that this in there where it is this vibrational escrow. It's a vibrational reality, and we're going to call it the vortex. The vortex of well-being that you have created for yourself. You put some of it there before you were even born into this body. You've put much of it there since you got there. And everything that life has caused you to ask for is there, not just waiting for you. It's there with law of attraction's response to it. Each and every request that you put there, law of attraction is responding to. And there is a veritable vortex, and we are emphasizing the vortex because we want you to feel the magnetic quality of it. We want you to understand that when you ask for something, everything that is necessary for the fulfillment of this that you have asked for is being summoned to it. All cooperative components. So when you ask for a lover of a certain stature, a lover of a certain look, a lover of a certain attitude, a lover of a certain financial condition, a lover of a certain love, a lover, when you ask for a lover, that lover is there, that lover is summoned, and every component that you've asked for has been summoned to this vortex, and it is there. All cooperative components have been summoned. The question that this workshop wants to ask and help you answer is, are you a cooperative component? Are you cooperative enough that you are being drawn into your own vortex where all your lovers are, where your money is, where your answers are, where your clarity is, where your vitality is, where all that you have become vibrationally is? Or are you an ornery holdout? Beating the drum of, I've been asking so long and it never comes to me and I'm getting tired of looking and all the good ones are taken. And it's really not fair, and my friend has a lover, and she isn't worthy of the lover that she's got. She doesn't treat him right, and yet there they are together, and I would be such a wonderful lover, but I don't have a lover, 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 I don't have a lover. And we say, yes, you do. You've got a lover. It's done. You got a lover, you're just not where your lover is. Your lover's over there in love. Your lover's over there with all the other cooperative components. Your lover will wait forever for you because the universe has the ability to keep putting a new lover in the place till you get ready. A new lover in the place. Well, that one went. Well, a new lover in the place. Well, that one went. A new lover in the place. A steady stream of lovers is making their way to your vortex on the rare occasion that you might get in the vortex, you see. But you got to want to be in there. You got to want to be in there more than anything else. You got to want to be in there more than complaining. You got to want to be in there more than validating. You got to want to be in there more than being right. Because often you are so right about the wrongness that you are focused upon. You are so right. You've got evidence. You've got emails. You have other bloggers. You have evidence of the wrongdoing that you are using as your justification not to go in the vortex. When you get in the vortex, you don't feel up in arms about others. When you're in the vortex, you're in this magical swirl of all things working out for you. And there are so many people who have discovered what that is. And they are people who have learned to talk about what they want, not about what they don't want. They are people who have learned to praise rather than criticize. They are people who have learned to be optimistic rather than pessimistic. They are people who have trained themselves, thought by thought, into the vortex. And that's really what we're talking about. For you to be the immediate beneficiaries of the escrow that you have lined up for yourself, you have to become a vibrational match to it. That's what it's all about. So, what do you want to talk about? We see you've come with nothing. Well, we're going to have a wonderful day of unfolding. Mm-hmm.
change. Thank you.
Life Conversations. It's all about positivity. It's all about self-empowerment.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.